I don't know if you've ever been taunted by a box of Frosted Flakes before, but over the past few weeks, I have been. I noticed at first when I was pulling out of my driveway and turning the corner, on the curb just beside my house was this empty box of Frosted Flakes. And I saw it very clearly, and I made one of those mental notes that maybe you make, which is, if I was a better person, I would stop the car and pick that up right now. But maybe I'll do it tonight or tomorrow. I definitely should do that. That would be the right thing to do. Now, I totally forgot about it that day. And the next day, I was walking the dogs, hands full with leads, dogs running about, and I saw that Frosted Flake box, reminding me of my moral deficiency. And I couldn't bring myself to stop at that moment. There was so much going on, so I just strolled by. And then this lovely snow came, and so it mostly covered the box of Frosted Flakes. So the ping that I felt in my heart just diminished that much more because it could be obscured from my consciousness. But it's still there, actually. I hope you won't judge me too much. I haven't figured out how, or haven't had the energy, or for whatever reason, I seem to have adopted this like righteous indignation towards it. I was never allowed to eat Frosted Flakes as a kid. So the fact that someone who has the privilege of eating Frosted Flakes would let their recycling just end up on my curb and not pick it up really annoys me. And of course, if I were to pick it up, I would be depriving someone else of fulfilling their responsibility towards this world. I was living out this phrase, which you may have heard. It's a Polish expression. Not my circus, not my monkeys. Now, there are some very healthy ways of living out that maxim, right? When someone's trying to pull you into their drama, trying to make you responsible for something that they should really be theirs. Not my circus, not my monkeys is a great thing to remember. But there's also times when that phrase can become an excuse, when it pushes our responsibility off on other people, distancing us from what should be our circus, what should be our monkeys. Now, it would be a lie to say that the Frosted Flakes box is the biggest thing that's happened in our neighborhood in a while. A couple months ago, I came home to a letter that had been taped to our front door. It was from a local nonprofit, and it was an invitation for our whole neighborhood to come to a conference call to discuss what had happened. I didn't know anything had happened. And so I asked my partner if he knew what had happened, and he said no. And so we asked our neighbor to our side in the next townhouse, and she also didn't know what had happened. So we all jumped on the conference call. It was very clear from the beginning of the conference call that a lot of my neighbors knew exactly what had happened. This local nonprofit had rented one of the townhouses in our little community as a stepping stone into independent living for some of their clients, a place of supported housing, where social workers would connect with the three people living in this house. It was a pilot project to see if it could be an effective way of bringing people into stable housing. And something had happened with one of the residents. One evening, he had a struggle. The police were called, and he was removed from the program. But on this conference call, my neighbors had a very distinct experience of this whole endeavor. Now, I had noticed that we had some new faces in our neighborhood. I mean, we don't have that many people in our small little cul-de-sac, so you notice when a new person is there. And I definitely noticed that they weren't the typical type of person that I expected to see in our sort of Stepfordish neighborhood. They embodied themselves in a little different way. Their life cycles, their routines seemed different. But on this call, this experience of this person having this struggle had really made an impact on some of my neighbors. One of them said that it had destroyed the fabric of their community, that they had felt like they were being invaded because they didn't invite this group to use this house. They said that after this incident, their neighborhood, our neighborhood, would never be the same, that we had such a tight-knit community that had been torn open by this one moment. Now, I listened to all of this and tried to have empathy for my neighbors. They obviously had an emotional reaction to this situation of the fear of this person going through a struggle, and I have been through many moments in which I have seen someone struggling with a mental health crisis, and it is scary. And yet, my progressive liberal part of myself just tore open, and I launched into what I thought was a fairly reasoned argument for why we shouldn't be expelling this program from our neighborhood, because that isn't the world we want to live in, right? That maybe because we're such a tight-knit community, we could be the perfect place for this sort of program because we could watch out for each other. We could build relationships with these people, that it wouldn't have to be this wouldn't have to be the end. That's what I thought I said. I think probably what they heard or what I did say was something like a long-winded rant about how they were terrible people. I so wanted it to be my circus. But what I realized in that moment is that I didn't have any monkeys, that I had no relationships with these neighbors, no parties to influence, no way of being authentic and real to them, for them to hear my plea, my desire, my hope. All I could do, as one of my neighbors said to my partner a few days later, was preach at them. Oof. The result of this not in my backyard, this not my circus, not my monkeys episode, was that they won the day. The program decided that they did not have the support necessary to continue this program. They decided that this work of trying to build relationships between people who are different had to happen somewhere else. Not here. Not in our place. Elizabeth Wynn is a Unitarian Universalist minister, and she has this to say that sticks with me and haunts me. There is this thing that happens for many of us, that some things are news and some things are family. For some of us, this Muslim travel ban is news, and for some of us, it's family. When we see increased immigration enforcement, for some of us, it's news, and for others of us, it's family. When we read headlines or scroll across news in which we see moments of addiction, of crime, of gay bashing, of mental health being used as a scapegoat in the media, for some of us it's simply news that we can stroll by, and for others of us it is family. When an earthquake hits Mexico or Iran or India, for many of us the scale of the tragedy is that just news, not family. Things that are easy to scroll by, to stroll past. Because when it's family, it ignites something in us. We show up not because our morals tell us to, but because it is us. We respond for family to fight scrappy and to the bone because it is us. We find reserves of energy inside of us that just having a moral conviction that we are right doesn't allow us to do. On Thursday, I got this email. I had a really busy day. I had about 30 minutes of unprogrammed time. And I was sitting there trying to make a list of all the things I should be doing in that moment that I should be getting done, but I didn't want to do any of it. I kind of just wanted to sit in my office, close the door, turn off the lights, and do nothing for 30 minutes. But I saw that I had a new email, and so I opened it, and it was from a young gay man here in Fort Collins who wrote a long email asking me as a clergy person, asking me as a person in a church, whether or not the Bible, whether or not God said it was okay to be gay. And so, without even thinking, I hit reply, and I wrote probably a 1,500-word essay to this person. Because it wasn't just news. It was family. It's why I think our One Village, One Family program that Homeless Gear, this local organization, runs is so impactful. Because it takes what can be an amorphous problem, that is homelessness, and it gathers people around a specific family so that you can build relationships with them, you can see them as people, and you can fight for them and accompany them as they move into housing. It takes something that could just be news and makes it family and puts you around it. It's the reason I think the students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School have been so effective these last few weeks, because they have refused to let us make their tragedy news, because they've made it family. Because when it's family, it takes an instant for us to claim those monkeys, no matter what circus they find themselves in, no matter how mucky they've gotten themselves, because they're family. Unitarian Universalists see life not as a collection of isolated and interconnected existences, but as an interconnected and interdependent existence, which means that if we lived and believed and acted out our theology, our faith would say that there is no such thing as not family, right? And yet the sheer scale of this family is unfathomable. There are 7+ billion people on this planet, not to mention the millions of ecosystems, each unique, that we abide with, let alone the billions and trillions of animal and plant and fungal life that makes up this beautiful world. Why it's so easy for us to reduce something to news, because the sheer scale of it becomes too much. There's actually a word for this. It's called the monkey sphere. David Wong came up with it. There was this British anthropologist in the 1990s named Robin Dunbar. And he looked at the size of primates' brains and tried to understand their capacity to engage in meaningful and stable relationships. And what he found was that based on the size of different primates, there was a cap, a capacity that each individual being had in the number of relationships they could maintain. What do you think the cap is for humans? 100? What else? Other thoughts? 150? 1,000? Dozen? Five? 20? It's about 150. If you think about this, David Wong has this great exercise to kind of help us conceptualize it. He said, first picture a monkey dressed like a pirate, if it helps you. And name him Slappy. Have Slappy in your mind and give him a personality. Are you doing it? Okay. Maybe because he's dressed like a pirate, you join up to fight crime together. Think about how it would be if you couldn't be in relationship with Slappy. It'd be sad, right? Now imagine you got 4 more monkeys. We'll call them Tito, Bubbles, Marcel, and Stella. Now imagine personalities for each of them. Maybe one's aggressive, one's affectionate, one's quiet, and the other just throws poop all the time. But they're your personal monkeys. Now imagine a situation in which every minute you got one more monkey. At what point would it be that this family of monkeys would turn into just a sea of monkeys that you couldn't really differentiate? That place in which those relationships go beyond our capacity to fathom in meaningful relational ways is called the monkey sphere, and for humans, it's about 150 people. And that's why it is fundamentally human for what's happening outside of our monkey sphere to be reduced to news. When we hear of something happening to someone inside that relational network, it hits us hard. And then if we hear of the same thing happening to someone outside our monkey sphere, it might affect us, but not in the same way. And that's because of our brains. It's why that spiritual practice of vigilance that Victoria Safford talks about is important, because it helps us to keep probing this practiced response of not expanding our family outside those who we have relationships with. I want you to imagine or ask yourself this question: who were the people that had the biggest impact on my life? And just take a moment. Think about the people in your life, whether they are with us right now, whether they are ancestors, whether they were with you in your childhood. Who were the people that had the biggest impact on your life? Practically always these people who have had the most impact on our lives are within our monkey sphere. And most of the time, they're the people that for a period of time or for our whole lives, we have close and repeated and regular contact with. The people that have the most impact on our lives are our coworkers, our relatives, our friends, our neighbors, our partners, the people that we see all the time, who show up for us, that when we appear on the news saying that God doesn't exist, they write us a letter. While there are 150 monkeys in our monkey sphere, each of us has about 8 to 15 people in our lives at any given moment that show up for us in meaningful and impactful ways. And conversely, each of us has 8 to 15 people in our lives at any given moment who we may show up for and have that same meaningful and impactful impact on their lives as the people who have made an impact on your life did in the first place. Who are those people in your life? Who are those 8 to 15 people, your coworkers, your relatives, your neighbors, your friends, your fellow church members, the kids you teach in RE? Who are those people that if you showed up in meaningful and impactful ways would transform their lives, because we all have them? The people that when you see them on the news, your hand would automatically write a letter of gratitude. The people when you hear they're sick, the casserole is already in the oven. Those people that when they text you in that tone and say, "Do you have a minute?" you drop everything because you know that it's important. Each of us has 8 to 15 people that we could show up for and transform their lives. Now, I'll be the first to admit that when I look at my list of even just 8 people, I have this sense of, I'm not really doing enough. I'm not showing up in the ways I could. I'm guilty of strolling by or scrolling by, moving them out of the category of family and into the category of news. And yet I want to tell you one story. It's about a family here at Foothills, a family who decided to show up in a powerful way to someone in their 8 to 15. This family has known a young man with a couple of disabilities for many years. But recently, because of a change in this man's family situation, he was in need of a host family, a host home. His parents were moving to another state, and they were forced between choosing to bring him with them, in which he would lose his community and disconnect him from benefits and support systems that he had been developing his whole life, or staying here and needing to find someone who could provide him that platform, that family, that relationships of stability. This young family, who has a lot going on in their lives, decided together that as a family, it was the right thing for them to invite this young man into their home, to be family with him, to figure out what it would be like to now have another person who inhabits the world in a very different way than them, into their lives, because they knew they had to show up. Something in them said it was the right thing to do. Not in an abstract moral way, in that family way. If we each intentionally, predictably, randomly show up to the people on our lists, our 8 to 15, if we witness their struggles and their triumphs, if we invite them or join with them in the ways that they are or could be unleashing courageous love in our world, imagine what our lives and their lives would look like. I did a little math. If you total up all of the people connected to our church, our members, our adult friends who float around, our children in our religious education program, and then you multiply them by their lists, not their monkey sphere lists of 150, just that 15 people that they could have an impact because of the relationships they already have. If you do that, even though it is 0.00000214% of the world's population, if you add it all together, this church could impact 50% of Larimer County. Imagine what Larimer County and Northern Colorado would look like if each of us intentionally made a pact with 15 people in our lives to work with them to unleash courageous love. I'm not even saying we should invite them to church yet. That's another sermon. This is our circus, this life, this great family of being. And you or I or any of us cannot take care of all of the monkeys. But there are 8 to 15 of them jumping on your bed. So show up. Invite them into this work of unleashing courageous love, and together we can transform Northern Colorado. Amen.